Welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. Hope you're all doing well. Man, what a year 2024 is shaping up to be. We seem to be in some sort of epic transition whose outcome is uncertain. Sort of feels like we're getting close to a tipping point, doesn't it? Like there's a high-risk, high-reward proposition that humanity is facing right now. Are we up for it? I sure hope so. To each listener, I will challenge you with this. Make this the year that each one of us wakes up to the best of his or her abilities. For those that are already in the know of what's going on, the challenge will be, how do we include those just arriving at truths that we knew months or even years ago? How do we welcome newcomers into the pro-humanity movement without making them feel inferior? And for those on the left who are sensing that shit just doesn't make sense anymore, the challenge will be, can you come over to something like Telegram and find some new inputs that seem to fill in parts of the map that you've been missing? Or maybe podcasts that help fill in the blanks. No judgment here as to where you're at on your hero's journey. And for all the kind-hearted humans out there, and we make up the vast majority of people, no matter what they say about us and no matter where you're at on the political spectrum, can we all see the tension and division that the globalists are trying to create, talking endlessly about this group and that group, hoping to distract and separate us? It's a classic Marxist ploy that they are betting you don't figure out until it's too late and America is lost. My guest today is a friend and fellow humanist and optimist, and I will tell you, when shit really hits the fan, it's the intelligent, free-thinking optimists that have a huge advantage. Why? Because seeing a bright future and humanity thriving in our next chapters creates possibilities that don't exist in the doom and gloom view of our future. Sure, we the people have enemies, and they don't seem to value us very much. So what? We have too much going for us to throw away the transformative tools that will naturally help to bring us through. My guest today is a wise friend who I've been wanting to have on this show for quite some time. Let's go sit around the fire with her. Enjoy. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Noel Rudy. Noel is based in Seattle and is a painter and storyteller who experiments with mediums to share her observations of the human experience. Fueled by curiosity and inspired by nature, much of her work explores the many layers of awareness and presence. Here is my interview with Noel Rudy. All right, I am here with Noel Rudy, my friend, patriot, creative, artist, writer, Noel Rudy. Noel, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so, so excited to be here.
Yeah. You know, you and I know each other for quite a few years, and we were kind of kindred spirits sort of during the whole COVID thing. And I thought of you recently. So we went out to lunch. I was kind of kicking the tires on episode, and I found out that you were a writer and that you had put together a book that's still not out, but you're still working on it, right?
Yes, still working on it.
And you were courageous enough to send me a PDF of it. And it's called Didn't Want to Do It. And I got to tell you, you're a really good writer and your writing is just like you. It's really funny and observational. And I found myself like laughing out loud throughout. And I think my favorite one actually was the tug of war one, which was just hilarious. Just, I know you, it was like, it was a chronicle of this frustration of this person that took your cell phone and you were trying to get it back, but just your reactions and your different strategies, it was hilarious. So good job writing it. And when do you think, are you like still working on it? I know you have a bunch of creative projects coming out, but are you going to put it out? Do you think it will be a book in the next, you know, 6 months, or, you know, what's the timeline on it?
Yeah, great question. And yeah, thank you for all the praise. It's been a fun journey writing it. And that story, that tug of war story that you mentioned, when it was happening, it was it was so surreal. And even when I reflected back on it, I was like, did this actually happen? Did I actually go out into the middle of the street and start screaming like a crazy person?
Yeah.
So it's been a journey writing, and I still have a handful more stories that I want to add to it, because throughout my life, there have been a handful of things that I just didn't want to do, but did. And there's been some interesting outcomes from that. So I'm shooting to get it probably finished. About 6 months is kind of the goal, depending on what other kind of adventures come my way between now and then.
Yeah, of course. You know, and one of the reasons that I thought it would be interesting to chat with you is, you know, the theme of the book is all the things that you didn't want to do and what you learn. And it kind of dovetails into what we've talked about from the very beginning of this show, which is our hero's journey, both collectively and individually, which always takes us out to the edges of our and beyond our edges of comfort. And I just wanted to ask you, like, why do we tend to learn so much when we get out of our comfort zones, when we get out of the grooves and do the things we don't want to do? Why is that such accelerated learning? And then on the flip side, like, why do we resist it so much? If we learn so much and we become different versions of ourselves from stepping into that, why, you know, do we still go, oh, I still don't want it? I mean, I'm a veteran of this, and I still don't want to do the things that are out of my comfort zone, right?
Yeah. It's fascinating to think about. And, I think the comfort zone, it's comfortable.
Yeah.
It's great. You know, it's warm, it's cozy, but there is no growth there. You know, there is no comfort with growth. Yeah. And, but it's hard to remember that. And, you know, I've always been a fan of getting uncomfortable. In fact, like, one of my morning rituals is to go down to the beach and walk on some really sharp rocks. And just to kind of feel that throughout my entire body, just to start the day and set the tone and be like, wow, well, you know, if I can endure this, like, what can't I endure? And I think, you know, one of the things that really inspired this book was I've been talking to a lot of younger folks, and a lot of them just haven't, some of them, they're just not willing to work. They don't want to take a job that's beneath them or isn't in line with whatever they think they want to do or who they think they are. And coming across some of these kids, it's been mystifying, because I've had so many jobs, and, you know, albeit they have not been glamorous, so many of them, I've learned so much and I've grown so much. And so I personally have made it kind of just a pattern of discipline to get uncomfortable, because I've seen the value of that. But there's so many people out there that just don't even want to feel any sort of pain. Like, you know, yeah, a lot of times at the dentist or at the doctor, they ask you, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your pain level? And it's hard for me, because I'm like, well, I don't know, because I mean, there is something there, but it's not, I can handle it, I can tolerate it. But some people don't even want a level 2. Because yeah, they don't want to be in discomfort. So yeah, it's a great question. I don't know if I have a full answer of, like, why people don't want to do it.
Well, I think also you see with younger people that they don't want to date.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to get out of their comfort zone. It's like, you're not going to find, like, it's uncomfortable to put yourself out there and in the dating pool. Like, that's not that's not a comfortable thing at all. Like, how are you going to find someone? You know, you say on one hand you want to find a man and settle down and have children or whatever the case may be, but it's like, they don't even, there's like, I don't want to put myself out there, it's scary. And it's like, wow, that's going to be hard to manage those things, right? And well, and you and I, you know, we were a little, during COVID, you and I were kind of wink, wink. We live in Seattle and we had kind of found each other, and we're like, you know, we quickly were like, you know, kind of murmuring, you know, whispering to ourselves, like, this is insane. Like, what are people doing? You know, like, why are they giving up all their rights? And why are they making this experimental shot? It seems like they want to make it mandatory. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, for me personally, I had had all my, you know, I wasn't raised as somebody that didn't get the vaccinations back then. It was just, there was only like three of them, right? And we all got them. Your parents, the doctor said, that's what you do. So like, okay, you know, but now there's a whole slew of them, you know, and I would be very cautious of as a parent, but I had looked at it and it was kind of a combination of like, wait a minute, this is new tech. This mRNA is brand new. There's not really a big track record. To me, it seemed like the rollout was the clinical trial. Like whoever was going to get it, I'm like, I don't want to be in that group because I don't know what this is going to do like 5-6 years down the road. And they don't either, I don't think. And just the way that they were way out over their skis. They were like forcing, you know, like first they were, you know, we're going to give you, you know, we're going to try to bribe you with like a gift card to a Starbucks, $100, you know, whatever they were rolling out to try to be nice, carrot. And then they were like, we're going to ban all these crazy people that don't want the shot. We're going to ban you from traveling or, you know, works like threatening you. And it, that just even made it more of a no for me. That actually confirmed what I thought. It's like, no. Why do you, Big Pharma, want me to get this so bad besides all the money you're going to make? But those are my reasons. I wanted to ask you what your reasons were. You were working in technology, and did you feel coerced? What were your reasons and what happened as you considered getting it?
Yeah, that was there were some wild times. Yeah, really lonely times too in the Seattle bubble. Like I was so grateful to have you there just to like, you know, catch a glance and be like, okay, I'm not fully crazy. At least someone else is crazy with me if we are crazy.
Right, totally.
Yeah. And it was really hard. I mean, I grew up Christian Science, which was, you know, it's a religion that doesn't, basically you heal through prayer. And so I didn't have any vaccines when I was a child, when I was born. And I never had like aspirin or any of that. It was just like pray through it type of thing. And albeit like, I don't follow that religion anymore. I think some of that programming I had as a child, I mean, I know some of that programming I had as a child stuck with me. And I'm truly grateful for that because it made me just think about what I'm putting in, what I'm intaking into my body that, you know, what, however you want to call it, God's spirit, the universe has provided me with this vessel. Like, what am I going to do to it? And how am I going to honor that? And, so when, this, I mean, just when COVID came around, I was like, what is this sickness that everyone's freaking out about? You know, I'm a conspiracy enthusiast. So I was like all about like, where did this come from? How did this come from? Is it real? All of the stories I was definitely rabbit holing on. And at the end of the day, a vaccine comes along and I'm like, the skeptic in me, that just everything in me was like, no. And I wasn't going to do it. There was no proof. And there was from the research I had done, there was no need for me to have it. But that's not necessarily how everyone, what felt like everyone in Seattle, was feeling. And I definitely had a lot of pressure, from my job, from my coworkers, from my friends, to get the shot. And like, especially like I love to travel. And especially when there was the rumors and the threats of like not being able to travel, I definitely contemplated getting the jab. And I remember at one point I sat down and just tried to visualize. I closed my eyes and just tried to visualize myself going into, I don't know, Bartels or the hospital or whatever to get this jab, to sit down, to say yes please, and to have the needle go to my arm. And as I was visualizing this, my whole body, I had a physical reaction. I just started shaking. So much emotion came through me and I just started crying and I was like, no. There is no way I'm putting this in me. And so that's really what gave me strength.
you're really a true pureblood if you didn't even get the childhood ones. I mean, like, dang, you know, holy grail of like humans.
Yeah, I'm a pureblood. I had some time in my 20s where I got like a hep B shot. I was working at a hospital or something. So, but for the most part, I'm a pureblood and I donate blood too, because I feel like it's just really good for my system. And I was telling my sister that, and she's like, oh, those people are so lucky that get your blood.
Yeah. You know, one of the reactions, I almost hate to say this, but one of my reactions when they were rolling it out and all the like, you know, threatening and all this stuff, internally, I was thinking to myself, how dumb do you think we are? And I mean, literally, that's what I was thinking. Like, no, God, Bill Gates is endorsing it. Oh, so I got to go out and get it. Like, I was just like, come on, people are going to see through this. But then, you know, the mainstream media just blares the narrative. These terrible anti-vax, these are crazy people, your aunts and uncles and coworkers that don't want to get it. Like, they're all, you know, the winter of death. Like, they were just doing all this, like completely absurd things that were coming out of their mouths, but people were internalizing it here in Seattle. I mean, not so much in other places, but Portland, Seattle, like, oh my God, we have to shame all these people that are thinking for themselves. We can't have them amongst us, you know? And it was unfortunate, but you know, it was interesting talking to you, and you said, you know, your bestie is a liberal and you still have a great relationship with her and you still talk to her. And I wanted to ask you about that because I was not so fortunate. Like, I lost a bunch of people on this very issue. because I was the lone wolf, man. They were all going, oh no, we have to get this. Even though I was saying, well, wait a minute, it's got a 99.7% survival rate. Why do you guys have to get that? I don't understand. You guys are all healthy. They were like, I was completely ostracized. I haven't spoken with some of them since because I'm like, it's kind of awkward. But there's a part of me that's, you know, where I'm like, God, am I ever going to speak with this person again? I hope so. I hope there's. And so I wanted to ask you about that because this, again, is something I don't want to do. It's out of my comfort zone. And here you are having this great relationship with your bestie and you guys were on opposite ends of these. So I just wanted to ask you like what your approach has been. How do you stay in your heart? Like I know a lot of people that are in our camp and a lot of them don't have any liberal friends. They don't. They just have libertarians and other Christians or conservatives, whatever is in their circle. But there's not a ton of liberals there anymore if there ever was. For me, there used to be a lot. And now not so much. So I wanted to ask you about, you know, that and just how you navigate that and how you keep your own truth, but also make space for your dear friend who thinks it sounds like opposite on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. At face value, my bestie, she's a total badass. She's a, you know, full on type A in control business owner, like she knows how to run shit. She's super opinionated, always has answers, can make decisions. And so at face value, I think a lot of people wouldn't assume that she is so open and so curious and so available to hear other sides of the story. And I'm so grateful to have her in my life. So she and I, we both come from similar upbringings, which are like, we were both poor and lived in small towns. And we both had very similar kind of traumatic childhoods. Mm-hmm. And both saw within that, like with our families, both of our families leaned on the government and got like handouts and help. And with her family, that really helped, you know, put food on the table. She had electricity and all of those things. And she saw those government handouts as being like extremely valuable and got her to where she is today. And so she wants to kind of continue on that path. And I fully respect that. For me, what I saw with these government handouts was my parents, using them in terrible ways and scamming the system. And to me, I saw that system as being broken and not necessarily helping people or benefited people. And so that's kind of like where we find our main split of things where I'm like, I don't believe in the system. I think it's broken. She's like, I believe in the system. I think I'm here where I'm today because of that. And so I think what it boils down to for us is that, you know, that's her lived experience. And I can't argue with that. And I love hearing about that. And I love understanding where she came from to get to where she is today and with those answers and beliefs. And so I don't have any desire to change the way she thinks. I just have more desire to understand who she is. And she has the same respect for me. And it's really both, it's just curiosity that really fuels our relationship and just understanding intents. And, you know, at the end of the day, like there is no one in the entire universe that is like me, that is like you, Tony, that is like her. And I see that as so beautiful. Like, I see our differences as so beautiful, and I respect that. And I love that, because this place would be so boring.
I know.
If everyone was like me. So I think at the end of the day, like, I'm super fortunate, because she's just extremely intelligent and extremely curious, and knows who I am, and knows that I always have like some sort of intent behind my reasoning. And it's great, because we can have amazing discourse, and it helps strengthen my beliefs and my ideas, because she helps pokes holes in them. And it makes for a great relationship.
That's a great description. Is she willing to go down some of the rabbit holes you've gone down? In other words, like on the shots, or is she, I mean, I love your description of her, by the way. You described her, just the way you describe her, is her being such a badass. I mean, she sounds like an awesome woman. I would love to meet her someday, but is she willing to go down it, or is she just kind of like, look, I don't have time for these rabbit hole things. I'm just going to get these COVID shots or whatever, or has she come over to your way of thinking a little bit because of the rabbit holes maybe that you've pointed out? Because I know for me, I was trying to help some people that I really cared about on the shots. I was concerned about their health, but I didn't want to be screechy or like this, like, you know, it's a slam dunk. If you get it, you're going to have health problems. I didn't want to be that way. I was just trying to be put some caution, like slow down, like what you don't need to lunge into them. And then, you know, when my parents got them, I was, you know, my dad was like, I'm not getting any more. You know, I've started to do a little research, and I'm kind of lining up with Tony now. But was she able to kind of consider your views on that? Or was she just kind of like, nah, I'm just going to do it. You know, my doctor says get it, so I'm doing it.
She, to be clear, of my friends that were pressuring me, she never pressured me, because she just knew and respected my approach. And we kind of have a little bit of a shorthand with one another when it comes to semi-controversial topics or whatnot. And how we go about it is, it's like we both just lead, like the idea is we lead by example. So you can either see what I'm doing and hop on board because it's working, or you can see what I'm doing, and when it's time in your journey to join me, you join me. And so a lot of times though, when we have something that we really need to get off our chest, I'll be like, hey, I'm going to say this once. I'm never going to mention it again. But I really want you to hear this information. And then I'll just say it, drop it, and then we can move on. And then,
wow. I'm hearing something for myself there. Yeah, I think that's a really beautiful, that explains a lot of why your friendship's so strong, and that you can still say things, but that you're respectful of the other person. Like, I don't need to say this more than once, because you're going to listen and you're going to consider it, and then you're going to do what's best for you. And so I don't need to say it 27 times, because you're not going to, you know, that's not respectful. So I just think that's really great. You know, you worked in tech for quite a few years, and we're at this place where, you know, it's the AI revolution. I mean, NVIDIA, Microsoft, like everybody's jumping on the AI train, ChatGPT, Google, you know, and there's a lot of controversy. There's, you know, we've grown up with all this kind of, I don't want to say predictive programming, although some people would say Hollywood's doing predictive programming on AI, but there's plenty of films that are legendary, you know, sci-fi films about AI, you know, sort of getting in survival mode for, you know, becoming conscious and then seeing humanity as the enemy. And it's extreme, but you can also see that something like that could get created. And here we are now in real time with multiple AIs, not just one. It's not just one singular AI. That all these companies have their version of this. And, you know, it's funny, Noel, like, and I'll give you a chance to talk about it a bit. My first experience with ChatGPT, everybody was talking about it at the club. And so I'm like, oh, okay, let me give AI a task. I'm really curious about this. So I said, you know, tell me how to quickly accelerate the number of people listening to my podcast, right? And what it tells me is everything I already know, right? Like, all it did was collate the four articles that every podcaster has read 1,000 times about how to build their listeners. So I was like, okay, well, no shit, Sherlock. Thank you for that. Like, I already knew all that. Like, there was literally not one single insight that it found and gave me that I didn't already know. And so I was kind of like, I was pleasantly surprised that it didn't come up with anything new, because all it's doing is taking everything that humans have already put together and saying, here's what it is. But I guess I wanted to ask you, I wanted to ask you specifically what your concerns are about AI. You know, you have this kind of low-tech group, let's say, that's, you know, probably got freaked out about the internet when it first came out, right? there's that group that's just like, this thing is going to be like Terminator. And it's like, okay, yes, we all saw that film and a bunch of others and iRobot and that stuff. We know that that's there. And there's some people that say, this is going to be the greatest thing. People won't have to work because AI is going to do everything. It's like, okay, there's that group. The truth is probably somewhere in between. And I guess since you worked in technology, I wanted to ask you, like, what do you think the benefits will be for us? How will maybe we use it that we're not seeing? But also, what are your concerns since you've worked sleeves up in technology? You know, I'm a user of technology. I like technology, but I'm also not seeing it maybe from the project management side, or, you know, I'm not in any of these companies in Seattle where I'm hearing conversations, you know, maybe months or even a year before the public even knows about it. So I guess I just wanted to get your insight on AI specifically.
Yeah, I find AI fascinating. And you just reminded me of this story I had heard about when the car first became available in the United States, on like a consumer level, I guess, or something, but it was still quite new. And I guess in some state on the East Coast, they started writing laws because they were worried about the cars startling horses and harming the horses. And so there's this one law where if you were driving down the road and there was a horse on the road, you would have to disassemble your entire car and move it off the road behind a bush or whatnot. And I just thought, you know, it's fascinating to think of like where we are today.
before you keep going, I'm just going to say, my money is on that was Vermont.
I think
it had to have been Vermont, man. That is a Vermont. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's just funny because now today we utilize a car so in so many ways, and to think of that is ridiculous. And, you know, that's a lot of how I see tools like ChatGPT, is that they are a tool that we will incorporate into many of our everyday projects and needs. And, you know, one of the things I find just super fascinating about AI is that in a sense, it's kind of a reflection of who we are today, how we've evolved as a society, because, you know, ChatGPT, it's going in and producing answers, it's producing content, and it's just scraping the web. And that is what we have created. That is who we are. And so I think with thinking about that is just so interesting that we can get this high level view of where we are, and taking that to the next level. Sometimes, you know, I love to overthink things. And one thing I've spun out on is how we as humans, in a sense, are also kind of artificial intelligence. Like when we think about all that makes up the world and the universe, and when I think about nature just in its simplest form, I think about how we as humans have evolved from that and are also a direct reflection of that, like trying to explain the seed growing through the dirt, trying to explain what the universe is. We are kind of artificial from it, but also from it. So right. Kind of a trippy thing. But yeah, so I know a lot of people are scared about AI taking over jobs and the world and whatnot, but I'm not. I utilize the tools every day. I think it's great to become familiar with a lot of these tools. You know, and even though ChatGPT can write and create images, it does it in a way that it can't do it in a way that I do. It hasn't lived my experiences. These AIs, they don't have my stories. They haven't observed from my perspective. They haven't reflected from my heart. And at the end of the day, like the need to communicate the human experience from a human is always going to be there. So
do you think it'll help artists in certain ways? Like, you know, like so much of art and content creation, creating art and stuff comes from the human imagination. Is there a way that AI will support the artist either in becoming more prolific or getting the art out there? Like, what will be the, you know, as AI rides shotgun to people creating things for humanity, how do you see, like, is there a way that it'll support it that you can see directly right now? Or is it kind of, you know, it remains to be seen because we're so, you know, we're basically in the first inning right now of AI.
Yeah, I think it definitely will. I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. You just reminded me of a time when I was a young kid and we were experimenting with some drugs and whatnot. And my one friend said, "I just wish I had a printer for my brain, man." And I think we're getting to that point, so she can have a printer for her brain. So I think there's definitely a lot of opportunity. One of the things that I love about creativity is, like, when people are given a framework, when people are given less or something new, seeing what they can do with that, not necessarily lean on it, but what they can make out of it. And so, yeah, I think it's going to get people just be thinking in new, exciting ways. So I think there's good things to come.
Yeah, I agree with you. They always, whenever something radically new comes along, they're always like poo-poo it at first. Like, oh God, yeah, this is the worst thing to ever happen. It's like, well, no, we're going to figure out a ways to work this where it's a benefit and a boon to humanity. The one thing that, and you and I spoke about this in a previous conversation, the one thing I worry, and this won't be true for all the AIs, I think there's going to be really teams that put together the AI and put together the algorithms that really support humanity and really support truth. But there's also, you know, I don't mean to single out Google, but they put out Gemini, and what a shit show, because it looks like it's collated by a bunch of woke tards that are trying to put forth a Marxist agenda. So they're like, oh, we don't need to have any, you know, pictures of the founders because they're all white people, you know? And it's just like, like, good luck with that. Like, so you're going to create a version of history. And so I worry a little bit about, you know, maybe an AI that doesn't have a lot of truth in it being, yeah, created, and a lot of people using that in schools where they're like, what do you mean there was a constitution in the United States? I never heard about that. You know, it's like, it sounds absurd, but I already saw it for myself when I think I told you this, and we don't have to go down this rabbit hole at all, but like, I was already seeing AI start to whitewash certain things about 9/11, like Tower 7. You couldn't find anything in the AI version. It had receded what happened with Tower 7. It fell without a plane hitting at a 47-story building from a few office fires. But it didn't say that. It said the new Tower 7, and it gave all the details of the architecture of the new Tower 7. And you could see that they pushed certain things to the background and that those could continue to fade out in the background over time quite easily. And so I just saw that you could create some architecture that wasn't giving the user the true picture of what actually occurred on a historical event, or do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. It's that Gemini situation too, was just, what a mess. But
oh my God.
Luckily, I do appreciate that there was an apology. They're like, yeah, we screwed up. So that was good. But you know, it comes back to it for me, in my mind, I think back to 2020, back to the pandemic, when you and I were being discerning, when we were being curious, when we were asking questions, and how we were able to build strength and grow from that. And like, now is another opportunity to continue to practice discernment and like to continue to ask questions and not just go with the status quo, but to, when you're presented things, understand the intent, try to understand where it comes from. Yeah. I think that's one thing that we'll just need to continue to practice as this AI evolves.
Yeah. Well, and that takes us into talk about discernment. Like,
yeah,
as you put your futurist hat on, not for 10, 20 years down the road, but just, there's been much talk about 2024. We're sitting on and I know you don't get into the politics either side, right? But but you can acknowledge that 2024, it seems pretty epic. Like, there's questions like, are we even going to have a presidential election, or is there going to be something, you know, there's a lot of like, you know, people are just, you know, truthers and conspiracy theorists are just like, look, watch out for black swan events, watch out for false flags. It's all hands on deck. And there's a sense that not that the world's going to end, but that we're at kind of like a really pivotal point in the nation and maybe the world. This kind of, we're going to know a lot more where we're at in the next, say, 9 months, next 12 months, right? As you put your futures hat on for the next year, you know, what do you see? What are you optimistic right now? You know, what do you think is going to unfold? You know, what are you prepared for, I guess? And how do you navigate what is probably going to be maybe a bit of a tumultuous 12 months, let's say?
Yeah. Well, I'm a natural born optimist, so I think it's going to be an amazing time, especially for people to grow, for people to practice discernment and be curious. I think it's going to be a wild ride. I'm still in disbelief of who the presidential candidates are.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like you said, I don't follow and, I don't partake in that. I just have my own beliefs about the system and don't want to be a part of it. But I just, sitting from the sidelines, I'm like, wow, is this really happening?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'll be fascinating. I think, and in Seattle, yeah, it will be quite interesting if it's anything like it was last time. It'll be, it could get quite lonely for people like you and me.
Yeah, hopefully not. I think, you know, one of the things that happened after all of this, I'm finding more of what used to be the silent majority. I mean, you know, I had the experience of traveling to other states and seeing like, oh, there's a lot of people that think like us. It's mm-hmm. just, I just happen to live in the most liberal city in the, you know, it's just like, and you can forget that here, you know, yeah. that, and there's a lot of people that think the way we do. We've been conditioned. Like, I don't want people throwing rocks through my window. I don't want people, you know, I don't want to be yelled at when I go to Home Depot or whatever. It's like, so yeah, it's just kind of like a survival thing of like, just kind of keep hunkered down. We find each other, you know, in different ways, but I think more people that are libertarians are like being more like, now we need to be a little more vocal right now so that so people don't think that it's just the radical left run it, you know, in Seattle, because it's not. It's far from true. But you mentioned that you've got another creative project that I really thought was cool. We'll wrap it up with that, that you're working on a journaling thing where you started to do a deep dive into maybe like the benefits, the science of journaling. I love journaling as well. It's changed over the years, and I tend to do it in spurts where I might have a bunch of journaling going on in a particular, you know, 6 month period, and then I back off of it. But I've always kept my journals. I've always found them to be helpful. And when I look back on my old journals, it's funny, Noelle, like, because I feel like I'm a creator. I used to paint. I dabbled in all that kind of stuff. But when I look back on my journals, way back before there was a podcast called Base Camp for Men, there was things in the journal that said Base Camp for Men. You know, like, it was written already. Like, you know, years before. And I'm like, hey, look at that. I was already, you know, the intuition was already coming. Yeah. The name was already there before the show ever got created. And I guess I wanted to ask you about what you're working on with that. Cause that sounds really exciting. And then where can people find you? You've got a bunch of artwork. So just tell us like what kind of creative projects you got going on and where people can find you.
That's so cool that you were able to find that and reflect on that. I love that. Yeah. Journaling is amazing. There's so much science that has proven that it has like various mental and physical health benefits. Research shows that it can help manage stress, anxiety, depression, promote gratitude and help with recovery of like traumatic events. But yet, even for people like, I'm a writer, but I can still find journaling intimidating. And so I wanted to put together a book that helps educate and inspire people to put pen to paper. And the idea is like, this book will help go into, it'll go into the benefits of like observation and contemplation and reflection. And then it will have a journaling portion of it that will include some of my past journal entries and musings. And then it will also have like prompts to help people get just into the groove and just to help inspire them to write things down. Like, it doesn't have to be complicated. And that's, yeah, that's the idea, is that you can have this book for years and years so that you can continue to go back and reflect and find those little nuggets of like plant seeds you've planted for new ideas to come. And also just see, you know, where you've been, and either mentally or emotionally or physically, and just how much you've grown, and just be able to reflect on that. And
do you ever look back on, like, I look back too on old journals. Sometimes I'm like, that one didn't. there's that one. Or even like, it's still a good idea, and I just never got it out of the gate. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, that is a good idea for a book, but I don't really feel like writing that thing right now. Right. Like, maybe someday. But and there's a bunch of stuff in there where I'm like, it's okay, Tone.
I've stumbled upon some cringy.
Really wasn't a great idea. But
yeah,
that's
or right. Like, wow, I was in a dark place.
Totally. Well, where can people find your art? You're a painter too. Where what's your website? People can go and click, find your stuff. I assume the journaling thing, that's something you're putting together, and that probably will be on the website too at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. So my website is noellerudy.com. So NOELRUDHE.com. Mm-hmm. And that's where you'll find all of my paintings and whatnot. And I'm hoping to have the journaling book done in the next couple of months. So that will be up there too. And then to follow along on just like my daily musings and news and what's going on, you can find me on Instagram, and it's just Noelle Rudy on Instagram.
Beautiful. Well, Noelle, thank you so much. It's always so great to talk to you both on the pod and off the pod. Just thanks for coming on and sharing your insight and your wisdom. We learned a lot. I loved hearing your story about your bestie and all the stuff we talked about. So thanks for making time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our time with Noelle as much as I did. To find her and all of her art and creative work, go to her website at www.noellerudy.com. Rudy is spelled R-U-D-H-E. And go get yourself some soft cotton tees from our sponsor, Stand Up Now Apparel, at www.standupnowapparel.com. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.